We do have a hashtag for Twitter. It's #SXWaste, and Recycle Match is our Twitter name or handle, whatever you'd like to call it. So if you have questions or comments, we'd love to see them through there. And since there's only 10 or so of us in here, we can make this an interactive session. So if you have questions or comments while we're going along, raise your hand, shout them out. Love to hear them and get people's feedback on what they're seeing here and any questions you might have. We're happy to discuss those. So let me give you a little bit of background about me. I'm a co-founder of a company called Recycle Match. We do enterprise software for waste and recyclables for corporations. Spent the last 10 or 12 years working on online marketplaces and software, selling all kinds of oddball things, and decided to do this in the waste space about 2 or 3 years ago. I co-founded the company with my sister-in-law, Brooke, who's here with the pink stocking on there, whatever that is. Scarf. I don't wear a scarf, so I don't even know what to call it. So I've done a lot of different things online and sold a lot of difficult things, and waste was a big challenge as Brooke and I started to talk about starting the company, and I've learned a lot about it. Wanted to share some of those things here today with you guys based on my background in technology and the things I've learned in waste. So thanks for coming today. I know you have a short time period to be in Austin for South By, and I appreciate you guys coming to the panel and listening and interacting with it. So a little bit of what we'll talk about today is Waste 2.0. Just to give you a quick overview, we'll go around a little bit on the background on waste in internationally in the U.S. The three waste technology is really changing the waste industry and how we manage it: transparency, software, and knowledge sharing and collaboration. And then we'll have some time at the end for question and discussions as well. So when I first started talking to Brooke about this industry, she'd been doing it for about 10 or 15 years working in the waste industry, and I was blown away by how big this industry is, how much waste is actually put in the ground every year, and how many people are actually involved in it. I think it's a big secret most people don't know about, but I was shocked by it. So just in waste materials, things going into a ground, 1.8 billion tons a year on a global basis. That's things we made, we used, and now are being buried in the ground forever. And companies are spending $147 billion a year to do that. So it seemed kind of crazy to us, especially when companies are saying, hey, you know, 89% of us thinks waste a high priority and we want to do something with it. The recyclables market is also very, very big. 600 million tons a year is being recycled and reused. It's a $160 billion market, and I didn't realize it employed, you know, 1.5 million people across the globe managing that part of the business. And so we've seen the CEO of Waste Management, who is the largest waste company in the United States, talk about what they're trying to do with waste, and he estimates that there's $8 to $10 billion of value in the waste they handle every year that they put in the landfills, and they're trying to figure out what to do with it. So technology's helping. There's been a lot of change over the past couple of years, past 2, 3, 4, 5 years, that's starting to make a difference. So we'll talk about a little bit about that here today. So a little bit more background. 10, 15 years ago, companies and people didn't care as much about the environment, didn't really worry about it. Technology for it was basically compliance software. Am I complying with the laws? Is it a spreadsheet? Are there little databases? People made those. And that's really was the purpose of technology with the waste, and it didn't really, it wasn't really very innovative. So the next step of it was reporting and more transparency around it. And the company that really started to lead that charge a few years ago was Walmart. And what they've done is make their results transparent, but they're also asking, you know, their 100,000 suppliers to set up a scorecard on how you're doing in the environment. How much waste went to a landfill? How much are you recycling? And they're scoring their vendors on this, and it's causing a ripple effect and a lot of change within the retail industry and manufacturing as well. So that started to make a difference and change over the past few years. The next thing you're seeing, and this is what the waste management CEO was hitting on, is maximizing the value. So there's new waste use technologies that are going on. There's new tools to sell waste or to trade it. And companies are trying to figure out how to unlock the value in waste, whether that's through reuse or energy or whatever it might be. There's a lot of new and exciting investments going into that space. And so now with the internet becoming more and more popular and social media and everything else, you're seeing more collaboration, more software around this, more companies working together to figure out the issues. The Yellow Pages Association is starting to take some of their Yellow Pages back and figuring out how to reuse those and recycle them, even with competitors that are distributors and printers in that space. So you're starting to see more of that and more producer responsibility. Europe has a lot of producer responsibility now. If you make something, you're also responsible for it when someone's done using it. So they're doing that in computers. They're trying to start doing that in cars and things. So that's kind of how technology has evolved with waste over the past, 10 or 15 years. It's becoming more accelerated like everything else. But it's exciting to see some of these new developments so that we can solve some of the environmental problems, unlock some of the value, and reach people's financial goals on it as well. So the first thing I'll talk about a little bit is the transparency via the web and how that's starting to change the waste industry. And so one of the new things that's out is the Global Reporting Initiative. And over 500 companies have decided to do this. There's some tools and some software they can use, and it makes their environmental results, including waste, transparent. So they're publicly stating how much waste went to a landfill, what they're recycling. And everyone can see this because it's open, it's global, it's on the web, it's transparent. And you're even seeing companies starting to post this on their own website. So you see the example here with Shell. You can go on their website at any time and see how they're doing across a number of different metrics. And you can see how they're doing over time, over the past 3, 4, 5 years, and as long as they've been tracking it. The really interesting thing that we've learned is that a lot of these companies are starting to pay people for performance around these metrics. So you can get a bonus if you're at XYZ company and you meet your waste reduction goals. And that's driving a lot of change within organizations because people will do what you pay them to do. So we're seeing some really cool things around that, and the transparency of the web is really starting to drive some of that. So social media has had an effect on a lot of industries. Obviously everybody in this room is at this conference, probably know a lot about social media. It was interesting to me when kind of researching this how much of an impact people thought it might have within their company, sustainability professionals, people working in the waste industry. And 76% of sustainability professionals, when they did the survey, thought actually doing better on the environment would help them gain market share. Certainly that's the case with a lot of consumer goods that we see, and I think we're starting to see it more in even the B2B space. Companies also are using social media internally on their Facebook pages and other things to talk to their own employees about what they're doing on sustainability, how they're meeting the goals, how we get ideas about how to improve things within the company. So it's really interesting to see how an old line, 100-year-old industry like waste is being affected by something new like social media. And people are really excited about using those tools to get change done and improve things within their companies. There's a lot of social things that can be done at work. So this is an example of a software product at a similar company that I know very well that puts this out. And what they have here is a way that you can get social at work. So it has a dashboard for people to see how you're doing internally at your company. There's things like best practices on here that you can share. So if you have 10, 20, 30,000 employees in your company, you have a tool now that you can go and share best practices. You can see how your company's doing. If you're at a plant in China and you're talking to someone at a plant in the U.S., you might be able to swap and trade different waste streams that are going to a landfill that somebody else might use. So you can use a tool like this to do a number of different things. And a lot of that internal transparency within a company can now be done that wasn't done 3, 4, 5 years ago. There's also a lot of transparent benchmarking going on. So Smart Waste is a group out of the UK that does this in the construction industry, and they benchmark how much waste goes to a landfill per company, what type of construction industry you're in. And the really interesting thing about that is companies can use this when they're doing things like RFPs. So you're selecting a vendor to do your construction, and you can see, is the vendor I'm selecting, are they the high price, the low price, but how do they do environmentally? What is their average that they've done benchmark across what's happened in the UK or the US or wherever? And so this kind of open benchmarking that you can find on the web allows people to make decisions not only around the money a part of it, but also around the environmental piece of it. So it's kind of interesting to see these as well. So the second piece of it is around software. And like I was talking about at the compliance, this is kind of what I've thought in my head of what softwares look like in the environmental space, you know, maybe 5 years ago. It's a couple of people sitting around in an old school room doing something like this. So the software industry in the sustainability space is really booming right now. There's 30, 40 startups getting into sustainability, a lot of them focused on waste, some on CO2. You can see here in this chart, there's a lot of venture capital investment going into these companies. And you can see it's a $60 billion industry by 2014. So that's fantastic for companies to be able to track and manage these things a lot better environmentally than what they were doing on spreadsheets or just on paper 5 or 10 years ago. There's a Tom Siebel, who founded Siebel CRM, even as a company in the space called C3, and he's put about $100 million into it already, and he thinks it's the next big hot space is around sustainability like CRM was 5, 10, 15 years ago. So it's really exciting to see this piece in it, and all these companies focus on resources, whether it's waste, energy, there's a lot of software around that. The whole sustainability space, there's a lot of new software players coming into it. So there's the old adage, one man's trash is another man's treasure. The software driving some of the new marketplaces that are out to trade waste and trade recyclables is also really exciting. This is one that's done in Kansas City by a nonprofit entity, and they have a number of companies like Sprint and Harley-Davidson who can go on this site and they can trade waste materials, they can trade recyclables. It's open and transparent for them to see. And so they go on the site and they use it, and a whole part of this software is for them to be able to open the kimono, because if you're hiding your waste and putting it in a landfill, it's harder to find solutions for than if it's open and everybody can see it. So this is a pretty good example of how you can, one man's trash is another man's treasure, using a marketplace or software tool like this. And these can be done publicly, privately. This is a consortium of companies that are using it right now. So a couple of examples by using a marketplace of where companies can get value out of it. This is a company we know of, Cooper Standard Automotive. They do their supply chain for automotive industry. They work with Honda and a number of other car makers. And they had some weather stripping, that little rubber strip that goes inside your door in the car. And they'd been sending that to landfill for years. They put it on one of these open marketplaces, and a buyer found it and said, yeah, I can recycle that. It doesn't have to go to landfill. So they avoided the landfill cost, $150,000 a year. They're saving 1 million pounds a year of rubber and some metal from going to the landfill, and they're actually being able to sell it now and turn around a profit on something they were having to spend to put in the ground. So pretty interesting story. IBM did something really similar. I love this one because it's so innovative. They had these silicon wafers that were off spec that they make for chips, and they were sending them to a landfill, costing them $1 million a year. They figured out they could polish them down a little bit more, and then they could sell them for people to make solar panels out of them. So a great reuse story, about a $3 million swing for them because they could sell them now for $2 million a year. So that's a couple things that the software has been able to do, is match companies up to be able to unlock some of the hidden value that the people have in ways that they haven't realized before. So big data is going to, it looks like, is a big topic here at this conference. There's some interesting sessions going on in the next couple of days. I hope to make it to some of them. But this is going to have a big effect, I think, on the waste industry, because there's a lot of aggregation that can happen with waste. If you take, for example, a shopping mall has some, you know, a gap in it, and they produce, you know, 200 pounds of cardboard a day, but there's not enough value in it alone to transport it, to bundle it up, to sell it to somebody, to keep it out of a landfill. But if there's a way to aggregate that through software with other companies in the shopping center, other Gap stores that are nearby in the same city, and develop routes based on this data and aggregate it, then you may have tons of cardboard that's valuable to a lot of people, and it will cover the transportation cost and drive a new revenue. So there's some interesting solutions around using data for that piece of it. The other thing on we have on here is the Dream Machine. And this is a bin that Pepsi and some partners can put out at different places across the United States. And it takes in bottles and recycles them, and it actually scans 170,000 different kinds of bottles. So they put these in different places to really judge the market on what plastic bottles are being used where, what's the volume, and then you can figure out where do I need to put a recycling plant that I don't have now, what equipment do I need, what kind of investment do I need. So they can gather this data from a lot of places that they couldn't necessarily do before. So big data is going to be really interesting on how this works in the waste industry, and I'm looking forward to seeing some of the other panels here on how big data is being used. But there's a couple of examples that I thought of right away that could be used in the waste and recycling industry. Location-based software is another one. Transportation is a huge factor in waste. It costs money, it costs gasoline, labor, everything to move materials around. And so by having some of the location-based software, you can figure out where are the best spots to move some of this waste, some of these things are the recyclable, and there's a lot more things coming online around location-based for recycling. This is an example of one for e-cycling, where you can punch in your zip code and you can see, you know, as an individual, where can I take electronics to be recycled. You can see a number of dots here in Texas and a lot in Austin, Houston, Dallas, places like that. Obviously, in the smaller towns, there's not there yet, but as we get more sophisticated with this type of software, I think we'll be able to have more impact on it. So location-based software is another exciting development, and people, you know, as you go to this conference, you'll see some new software out, like one I tried called Highlight, which is location-based, and it connects you with people with similar interests. So there's could be some application for that in the waste industry as well. So the third thing is knowledge sharing and collaboration across different groups, across industries, across people. And there's a couple of different applications for this in the waste and recycling markets. So some of you guys might have heard of FreeCycle. This is more of a consumer-to-consumer, peer-to-peer type system. And what this does is you put out things that you would normally throw in the trash, like an old couch or whatever, you know, chairs, whatever you might have. And you can put this out on their website, and other people in your community can see it and come by and pick those materials up. And it's usually done for free. There's no commissions or anything else. There's people trying this in the business space. You have Neighbor Goods, which is a website where you can actually share different materials instead of buying new ones and replacing them. So if you have a drill and you find out your neighbor down the street doesn't have a drill, he can come rent it to you from you for like $5 a day. So there's a lot of these sharing and collaboration things that are going on that are keeping things out of a landfill and accelerating recycling as well. On the collaboration front, probably the most famous one is the Consumer Electronics Association. They have a thing called the Billion Pound Challenge. And this is Best Buy and Sony and a number of electronics companies and retailers working together to try and keep electronics out of the landfill. And so they're trying to get to £1 billion in the next couple of years and trying to keep these things from going to China and other places like that, actually recycling all of the materials in these. So that's pretty interesting because you've got some fierce competitors starting to work together, and you're seeing more and more different industry groups trying to do this. And certainly the way that they use software and the web helps promote that, helps track it. So it's going to be fun to see how that develops as well. We're seeing even more sharing of intellectual property in the environmental space. I don't know if anybody's heard of this, but this is called the Green Exchange. This was set up by Nike, and they actually have patents and intellectual property here that's open for other companies to share to improve the environment. So manufacturing processes, materials, they're sharing, and a number of companies are doing this in order to share those best practices that they normally wouldn't. They would keep those internal. They wouldn't make it transparent, but they're trying to do that to help the environment and help people really work better together to solve some of the environmental problems that we have. So it's great Nike's doing this. There's another number of other companies involved in it, and it's this thing's growing pretty rapidly. So if you go check it out, it's fun to go look at. You can actually see, without being a member, some of the things they offer. You can't see it in detail, but you can go in there and take a look at it. We talked a little bit about best practices. And so best practices, there's a lot of different ways that it can be shared. Walmart shared one that they have, an invention that they put together with another company called the sandwich bale that allows you to bale up different types of materials together, which you couldn't do before. And so it kind of squeezes the things together in different layers, like a sandwich with like ham or cheese or bread. And you can do that and transport and recycle it much easier. And so they've shared this concept with a number of other retailers, and they themselves have saved 200 million pounds from a landfill since 2010. So not only the kind of old school manufacturing technology, but the sharing of that is great. Normally companies would keep those things a secret, but in the name of the environment, they're sharing more and more of that. Crowdsourcing is another interesting concept in the waste and sustainability space. Timberland has some challenge things up on a website that they have, and you can source ideas for innovation. People put questions out there. Other people come in and answer them and try and solve the problems with them. There's a company out of England called Mayu Create who has a thing called the Beat Waste Challenge. And they put out different waste challenges to companies, and if you solve them, you get $5,000. So there's kind of a bounty on solving some of the problems that companies have managing their waste and streams that are going to a landfill. So we hope to see some more of that. But it's pretty interesting when you get, 40, 50 people answering questions about a waste stream to be able to solve the problem of how it might be reused and kept out of a landfill. So the crowdsourcing is another area that we're excited about. So in summary here, go ahead.
Sorry, what was the name of the company on the last slide?
So this is Timberland that has this Voices of Challenge website. And then the other one's called Mayu Create. It's M-Y-O-O and then Create. And they're the ones who do the waste challenges.
Great. Thank you.
Yep. So in summary, we really like the way that technology is being leveraged more and more to make waste a resource. There's more and more transparency. You've seen the evolution of it over the past 10 or 15 years. Software is a very fast-growing, hot area in the waste space and in the environment in general, seeing a lot of investment in that. And then the sharing and collaboration piece, a lot of people are doing creative things that are going to be fun to see as it goes forward. So that's a quick overview. Wanted to see if anybody had any questions, comments. Yeah, sure.
How do you recycle old phones?
Old phones.
You're talking about for yourself, right? The million pound challenge that he was talking about, they've got drop off spots at Best Buy. They also have a lot of the retailers for. So that's, as a consumer, that's where.
Yeah. I think Goodwill has some electronic drop-off spots there as well. I know they do in Austin. They might in some other cities. So, you had a question over here, too?
Have you ever heard of its Smart Association, but they do the recycling of clothes that goes into, like, the secondary wiper market? Have you ever heard of them?
Yes.
Okay. I'm still trying to find, like, to be in their association, even if you're an associate member, it's like $1,500. And I'm trying to figure out, like, how, like, what the process is to get into their, like, loop, get stuff from them.
Oh, to try and buy the old clothes and things so that you can make them into wipers or reuse them?
Yeah, reuse them. Upcycle them, basically.
Yeah. So there is. What she's talking about, there's a group of, it's probably 150 companies in the U.S. I think they have some overseas. But they take and gather old clothing, and they break them down, they turn them into wipers, and they resell them. And so they gather the old clothing. I think they buy some of that clothing from places like from Goodwill. And the clothing gets baled up. I would start with a place like Goodwill and see how that works for them.
And they do have, like, if I had an 18-wheeler, I could get on their vendor list, which is like
right.
Pull up and pay a certain fee and get a whole 18-wheeler. But I'm, since obviously I'm a much smaller gig. I'm like, how do I get some stuff from them? It's just one of those, I keep trying to find a solution. I'll get there, but it's just taking me a while.
Yeah. Trying to think of some other area. You know, a couple of areas you might look for that for the smaller quantities or smaller retailers, maybe local ones.
I found one through your company, Recycle Match.
Mm-hmm.
They're out in New Braunfels, so I'm going to be working with them.
Okay.
So that's at least, you know, I'll at least start there, but yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how to get a little bigger lot.
Yeah, some of the smaller retailers even have take-back programs where there's returns and they can't resell them. And so you might talk to some of them and see what they're actually doing with those type of things. And then the community centers like the one in New Braunfels and things like that are a good place to start with that too.
Also, it sounds like you've used Recycle Match. I don't know if you've already set up an alert, but if you've got alerts set up, it'll let you know via email anytime clothing hits the website, and that might be a way to kind of be reminded.
I don't think I've done that yet, so that's a great idea.
Yeah, so setting up the alerts helps.
Where does the sustainability function typically lie within a Fortune 500 company? Which finances and supply chain, is it all over the map right now?
Most of the Fortune 500 companies have started to set up their own sustainability groups. Typically, it's kind of been within materials management or the supply chain piece of it. But most of them now have set up special groups because they have to do this tracking and they're being more transparent with it. So they have groups of 5 or 10 people in some of these companies that will go out, especially if they have like 100, 200 locations that they've got to manage the data from. But they'll work together with the supply chains, the plant managers, and work together to figure out how they're tracking the data and to get the improvements. Haven't seen much of that like within a financial part of the organization. It's mostly typically the people in operations that work in the plants.
And how early would you say the software space is in this particular space? You mentioned Siebel starting to put investment in. I mean, if you compare it to the CRM space, you know, when they started and then Salesforce became kind of the...
Right.
Solution. I mean, where do you see this?
Yeah, I think it's really early stage where you see 30 or 40 companies going at it, and then there's going to be two or three. Like in CRM, there was Siebel, there's Salesforce, there's a couple other out there, and they're started with 50 or 60 of them. So you're going to see some of them dwindle down just like you see in any new emerging market. And I think it's still pretty early. I mean, some of these companies are only 2 or 3 years old. Some of them are 20 years old that have been doing things in environmental and now are getting into this space. So it's going to be really exciting to see how all these guys play out. And Siebel has raised, you know, $100 million. He's got Condoleezza Rice and all these big shots on his board. It's going to be it will be some kind of change. There'll be some consolidation that'll go on in that market, I think, as these get bigger. So,
well, and I mean, kind of the thing on that that's interesting is when we talk about the 30 or 40 people or big companies in that space, sustainability is still a really broad term. And so within that, you've got a lot of people that are focused on the carbon piece or the energy piece or the water piece. And, you know, some of the bigger players like SAP and Siebel talk about carbon, energy, water, and waste, but they haven't actually gotten to waste yet. It's kind of like the last on their list. So, you know, we're talking about specifically waste. There's not 30 or 40 of those companies attacking that one niche directly right now. It's all sort of evolving, right?
Yep, exactly. And we've always thought of waste as kind of the laggard. People just don't understand how big of a space it is. And so they're focused on some of the easier things are energy. Easier to solve. You change light bulbs out and do things like that. It's harder to do waste because they have these waste streams are big. You've got to move the things around. You've got to find a new solution for them. And that's why technology, more sophisticated software and aggregation and things like that are a big help to it.
Sort of a follow-up question. How does the software, the technology helps monitoring like the global production chains in terms of waste? Any software that deals with international dimension of that?
Yeah, so a lot of companies that I've personally talked to are doing all this on spreadsheets, or they have set up a little web-based database. So they have a plant, 130 plants, let's say, and once a quarter they make the guys go put in their data around the waste and recycling. And so it takes a lot of work for them to consolidate all that, put it in their quarterly reports, do it in their sustainability report. So the software that's going on right now is just much more sophisticated, easier to use. There's a lot of different ways you can put the data in. You'll see more multi-currency, multi-language type capabilities, which of course you don't have in a spreadsheet. So that's kind of evolution. I think you see in other software spaces, you'll see the same thing.
I have a friend in Houston who runs a recycling service, and he does pickups at local bars and restaurants, things like that. And I haven't talked to him in about 6 months, but the last time I did, he has to charge a small fee to do these pickups. But it seems like we're getting to a point where he can sell these materials and actually pay them a little bit. Is that possible soon?
Yeah, that's definitely the vision for it. A lot of it depends on the commodities and the prices. So if he's, say, doing glass, if he's going around to the bars and things, I'm assuming that might be what he's doing. The pricing for glass right now is not very good. I mean, you can hardly give it away. It's maybe $5 a ton. If he's doing aluminum, yeah, that's fantastic. You make a lot of money doing that. And when you saw the economy dip in 08, you saw all the prices of recyclables go down, and that lowered people's recycling rate because, I mean, glass and even cardboard, they were having to throw away when 6 months earlier they were selling for $100 a ton. So the way we think of it as everything's a resource and it shouldn't be thrown away, there's some value in it, but then you do have to take into account the transportation costs and other things in there, so there could be small fee for it. As new uses come up, people like waste management doing waste energy and things like that, the materials will get more valuable. And it may be that, you know, like French fry grease 10 years ago, no one wanted to touch. Now you can sell it for a lot of money. And every restaurant you go to has a big bin in the back, and they come by and pick it up for free, and then they go sell it. A lot more commodities need to get to that as new technologies come online to do those type of things.
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem that your friend is dealing with is small business generates small volume, and that was the aggregation comment that Chad was making earlier was, you know, you really have to get more sophisticated, and that's what he's doing, about building his routes and gathering enough route density so that he doesn't spend a fortune on gas going from one bar to the next trying to pick out little bits of glass at every stop. So that's where the aggregation piece comes into play on balancing out his costs with the value on the other side. But I mean, like for companies, big companies like General Motors that have large volumes of manufacturing waste, they make $1 billion a year off of selling their waste. So yeah, there's a lot of value in those materials. It's just if you have enough of them and if your costs are relatively low collecting them.
Yep. Question? Yep.
How's waste management feel about companies like RecycleMatch? Do they see them as potentially a tool that they can offer their clients, or they see that impacting their core revenue streams, or are they looking to expand revenue streams and offer other tools and things to their clients?
Yeah, you want to take that one?
yeah, it's interesting because I think different companies look at it different ways. I mean, some of the larger players in the industry, like Commission Waste Management, I don't know if you're talking about the industry or the company.
Yeah, just some of the big players.
You know, they do a lot of stuff in-house, and so they may be focused on building their own in-house, whereas other companies in the space are looking at it as a way, looking at our software tool in particular, as a way that they can, number one, manage their materials and actually sell the materials that they collect, but also do a lot of the sustainability reporting back to the customers. So it really kind of depends on the company as to how they view it, if they want to deal with it internally, or if they want to be part of a more open-source shared platform. And I think a lot of the smaller companies are much more open to that open source shared platform for a number of reasons.
Sure.
Yeah. Comments, questions? Anybody else?
So you've been running RecycleMatch for 2-3 years?
About a little over 2 years.
Just anecdotally, what are some of the more interesting connections that have been made?
Yep. So we've had some pretty interesting ones. one of the better ones we did was for vegetable waste that came out of a soup factory. It was something like 150 tons a month going to a landfill. And this was vegetable waste that had a little bit of glass and plastic in it, so they couldn't be fed to animals, and they're just putting it in a landfill over and over. So we were able to match that vegetable waste up with a company that has these big biodigesters, and they can make natural gas out of it because it has the carbon and different things in it. It had a little bit of like French fry grease with it too that they could mix in. And so that was a pretty interesting one because I didn't know much about these biodigesters, but it's like a cow's stomach is really what it is, and it's made in these big old bins they have out. And so there was some transportation issues with it because it was far away. As the commodity prices started to drop on this, though, that match had to be unmade because the cost got too high for them. So we think as commodity prices come up, hopefully that'll help, and if oil and gas prices don't go too high, they can do the transportation on it as well. So that was a pretty interesting one that we did. We've done some of the wiper deals on the clothing, like you were talking about earlier. What were some of the other ones that we did?
Well, I mean, some of the small ones are kind of fun, even though they're not, I mean, they don't put the numbers on the board as far as volume, but,
yep.
You know, you're talking about small business and kind of being creative. I mean, we saw people that were interested in, like, that that same rubber stuff from the inside of cars, using that as a purse strap, which I think is, like, completely random and hilarious, but, you know, they've... Women's handbags have gotten so big that they're like, yeah, we need a really heavy-duty inside material. We can wrap it in leather. So, you know, even though some of the smaller ones don't really put up any big numbers, it's kind of fun because that's where there's a lot of creativity.
Yeah, we had a glass deal. One of our first deals that we did was for a company in downtown Houston. When the hurricane hit there, their glass didn't hold up, so they had to replace all the glass in the building, and that stuff was going to a landfill. So they got with us, and we found a solution for a company that could take that glass and crush it up and make it into those kind of cool granite countertops where they put all those materials in them. And that was a pretty fun one. That saved about 300 tons from the landfill. It's really a great feeling to be able to do something like that and help the company save money by not putting things in a landfill, and then being able to reuse it in something creative like that. It's really cool. So.
And then you see other things that are just not that interesting, like chemicals that are being reused, and, you know, like we've got old fire hoses. That was my phone call I just took.
Yeah, those get made into purses too, and bags and things. So yeah.
I bet those are durable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they're really good.
Tear.
Right. Yep, you got to have those creative solutions. It's hard with the high volumes if people are doing the creative stuff on there, though, because it's mostly handmade craft type items. But it's still fun to do. All right. Yeah, you have a question.
And to be clear, and this is more of a comment than a question, but I know, you know, it sounded like for the guy in front of me here that said you've been around for 2 or 3 years, you know a little bit about us. We started out as a marketplace. And that's still going. That marketplace is still alive. So if you go out on the website, you'll still see it. If you signed up, you'll still get notifications, that sort of thing. But we've also pivoted to do more of the software platform for the large corporations because we realized that big companies wanted a lot more control and privacy than they were able to get on our public marketplace. So the software piece is really more of a solution for those large corporations. And that's where, when we talk about doing that kind of work with waste services companies or with large manufacturers, they would be using the software. And you may see some of their stuff on the public marketplace, but some of it they may keep in private as well.
Yeah. What international is the market in terms of the metric? Do you have a lot of international clients?
We do. Yeah, internationally in places.
Is it trained there or a region?
Europe is where people are mostly excited about this. I mean, they're more environmentally conscious than people are in the U.S. for sure. They have less space. It's more expensive to do things over there as far as transportation. They're more conscious of resources. We're a pretty resource-rich country here. So they manage that very closely, and that's why you see things like collaboration starting over there. You see the producer responsibility where you make something, you got to figure out what to do with it at the end of the life. and they're trying to do more of that here in the United States. Of course, it drives up cost, but there are laws in Europe where, especially around electronics, where when you're done with your PC, it has to go back to this manufacturer and they have to do something with it. You see, that's where a lot of the drive and the change is going with it. U.S. isn't that far behind. There's other places in the world, I think, from what I've learned, that are way far behind and don't care as much about the environment, don't have the laws and everything else with it. And a lot of the change, it's at least I've seen being driven, is not by the government, but it's by the dollars and cents of it. I mean, Walmart's, yeah, they like the environment, but, man, they're financially hungry. I mean, they're figuring out how to make and save money. That's why they did the sandwich bail, man. They don't have to send all that to a landfill now. They save $80 a ton. It's a lot of money when you're doing that kind of volume. So it's good. It helps the environment too, but, you know, the green is on the dollar side also.
So, mm-hmm. Do you notice people talking about cradle to cradle? I mean, does that come up at all? Like, we make something that it should... You know, it should either go back to the company, be refurbished, or is that not really in anybody's...
I haven't seen much of that in business. We certainly know that concept. Brooke knows a lot about that and has read the book, but I haven't seen, at least with interviews and the interactions we've had with a lot of companies, haven't seen a lot of the cradle to cradle.
It's just more about the dollars and cents that they want to save the money.
That was the initial driver of it, but now with all the transparency that's going on, I mean, if you're not publishing an annual sustainability report, people think you're doing something wrong. And so that transparency piece is driving a lot of it too, but they also want to save money. And I think that was what started this with Walmart, is, and they made a lot of change in the industry, obviously.
Well, I mean, when you talk about cradle to cradle, I mean, kind of clarify, I mean, that's the idea of, you generate it and then you turn it back into itself. I mean, it basically constantly regenerates. And I think that in theory that's really awesome, but in practice that gets complicated for a lot of these companies. And that's where I think the similar theme that Chad was talking about is producer responsibility.
Right.
Where it's not necessarily that they're going to take back their cell phones and turn them back into new cell phones. They're not going to be quite that closed loop about it. But
they'll take it apart, they'll reassemble it and use it for something else. Or
yeah. So I think
precious metals are a big deal.
That's probably the practical version that actually... You know, the theory is cradle to cradle. The reality is more producer responsibility for business. And then I think, you know, companies do want those types of closed loop matches. And that's something that we see a lot, is companies saying, well, I want to figure out how to collaborate with my own supply chain so that the plastic that we end up having to get rid of at the end of our manufacturing process can go back to the company that we buy plastic from. So, in a way, it's kind of that cradle-to-cradle concept, but through the supply chain, a little bit bigger, more complicated.
Yep. Okay. Well, great. Well, thanks, everybody, for spending your time with us this afternoon. Open for questions after, and I think there's another session after this one, but I'm sure a lot of people will be going to happy hour here on a rainy afternoon. So thanks again for coming.
Thank you.